We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
Now, what do you make of, I believe we've talked about this a lot in the past, or at least at some point, that you're of the opinion that Bigfoot is sort of paranormal.
Yeah.
So I guess what's your take on the rise of Bigfoot in pop culture in the last, like, 5 years? Because,
when
I first started this show, nobody was talking about Bigfoot. We were all talking about Bigfoot, but nobody, he wasn't in commercials and didn't have TV shows, but Bigfoot does now. So, what do you make of that?
Well, it's kind of like a lot of paranormal TV and books and magazines, that things come in sort of, rises and falls. And I think the current thing right now is Bigfoot is sort of in vogue and it's popular. And, I do a lot of TV, and I know that when one TV company and a channel has a hit on one particular subject, everybody scrambles to make their own version of it. And they're usually pretty inferior. And it's kind of like Monster Quest. I thought Monster Quest was a really good show. Because one week it was like Bigfoot, the next week it was a lake monster, then it was werewolves and whatever. And they went out and they did real investigations. And I went out, I did a Mothman episode for Monster Quest in Wisconsin, and we did real investigations. We went out and did stuff. I can tell you, because again, I see a lot behind the scenes, that certain ones of these shows that are made now, they call them reality TV, but they're not. They basically, a lot of them, they fabricate stuff. And I'm not exaggerating when I say, I'm not talking about them just recreating stuff, if the camera didn't pick it up. I'm talking about fabricating stuff, lying.
Hmm.
I can tell you there are certain shows, I'm not going to be stupid enough to name, but there are certain shows where they deceive the viewer, and footage has been shown that isn't real footage, and it's made for the show. And there are other shows. I mean, the whole Bigfoot thing right now, I understand that. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with making an entertaining TV show about Bigfoot or UFOs or anything. The problem I have is the fact that so many of the shows are just crap. You can tell that what's happened is that they've been given X number of dollars for the budget, and they go into one particular area of forest land. They do sort of an hour's of worth of filming. Then they wait till the sun sets, and then they do the nighttime shots because they think it's atmospheric to look for Bigfoot at night. They break a few twigs and branches. Somebody says, "What was that?" And that's the episode. Well, anyone could do that. And the point is, everybody does do it because it's just lazy TV. And that's what I have the problem with. I don't have any problem with, Bigfoot becoming part of popular culture and TV shows all over the place. I just wish they'd do it with a bit of skill, talent, and in a way that makes it watchable rather than make you just think, what was the point of it? It's just, that's the issue I have. But in terms of my views on Bigfoot, I think the idea of going out with guns or nets and cages, for me, it's not going to work, because this is where I differ with a lot of cryptozoologists. I don't actually consider myself a cryptozoologist, even though I write about cryptozoology. I would say I'm a 14 who has a big interest in cryptozoology, which is very different. But, there are so many cases where Bigfoot comes across as like paranormal or non-physical. We really should have a body by now. One should have been shot or hit by a car, or one body should have been found. I'm not asking for 100 or 50 or 10, one. But Bigfoot always skillfully escapes us. And there are a lot of cases where there have been ties in with UFOs and paranormal phenomena. And that's why I think it's some sort of, whether you look at it as like a spectral creature or interdimensional, I don't know. But running around the woods with guns has never worked. Cages have never worked, but really, a lot of these shows aren't about that. They're just about ratings. They couldn't really care less what Bigfoot is.
The weird part, and I'm sure, possibly someone in the chat room can correct me, or a future listener can email me, but it seems like, especially with these new shows, but it seems like the concept of an interdimensional Bigfoot, the concept of a spectral creature, never really gets any play. To the people in the mainstream, to the folks who watch these shows and then shut them off and go to bed or whatever, and don't read the books and talk to folks like you and I are doing, it probably doesn't even cross their mind the possibility that this thing's interdimensional. So it's kind of weird that they're not even being told this possibility.
Well, one of the big problems is that, and again, I get this because of doing a lot of TV. You know, I'll get a call from like somebody working for a TV company and they want to try and sell the show to their network. And they'll phone up and say, you know, are you interested in coming on this show? We're shooting a pilot. And they know nothing about Bigfoot. You know, they ask you about Bigfoot. Well, what can you tell me about Bigfoot? And they think they've watched one or two shows and they're, oh, Bigfoot's a giant ape and runs around the woods and we're going to go and look for it. They don't know any of the history because they're not in the subject. They're not, you know, they're not cryptozoologists. They're not 14s. They're TV companies that one week may be making a Bigfoot series and then the next week they're making a series on arguing housewives or whatever, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when you're faced with people who are good in terms of making shows but know nothing about the subject matter, that's where the problem comes in, and that's why the shows are so predictable, because it's not that they refuse to think outside the box. They don't realize there is something outside the box that presents a different approach, you know.
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, because some folks here are suggesting that they don't want to confuse the folks, you know, the people watching by introducing something this radical. But I feel like there's legs to it. I think that there needs to be more, you know, exploration of the gray area, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, my view is this, that, I mean, if you investigate reports of sightings of gorillas in Africa, well, you investigate sightings of gorillas, and they're normal reports of an animal that lives, you know, in the Congo, in communal groups, etc. But there's nothing paranormal ever occurs around gorilla sightings or chimpanzee. They don't vanish in a flash of light. You know, there aren't weird lights flitting through the woods. But regardless of whether cryptozoologists agree with me or not on the theory, there's not a cryptozoologist out there, I guarantee, who hasn't got, over the course of their career, so to speak, at least a handful of reports that are really weird, where the creature has vanished in a flash of light, or it's faded away, or the footprints have suddenly come to a halt, or it's been seen at the same time and place as UFO activity or strange lights in the sky. Now, normal animals don't react or act like that, and they don't provoke all that weird stuff. But Bigfoot does. And for me, to ignore that body of evidence is just stupid. I just don't get it. And so I don't understand why nobody's ever really done a TV show. But I actually think it'd be kind of interesting to have a show that sort of crossed over from, like, Monster Quest and Ghost Hunters and was a combination of the two, you know.
Exactly. There's something to be gained there, intellectually-wise, by exploring.
Yeah, I mean, it's like how many more times do we really have to sit through some show where bunch of people run around, what was that, did you hear this, what was that, and all you get is jerky cameras and night scope stuff, and that's the episode, and then they go on to the next place, you know, and it's the same again. I just don't get it.
Right, or you know, even though it's a fantastic case, I mean, how many recreations are they going to make of the Rendlesham incident, you know?
Well, that's
seems
right.
Like every
I
new
mean,
series that comes along has a Rendlesham show, and you see the same talking heads, and you're left with the same questions you've had since you first heard about the case. You know?
Yeah, and I think often it's not necessarily just the case. I mean, done properly, reality TV can be really good. When it first started, you know, it was kind of edgy and new. But what the problem is, what passes for reality TV today isn't what it was when it first started, and it's kind of lost its edge, and it's become lazy, and it's like, oh yeah, we'll just get commissioned to make 6 episodes, and if that's all we make, well then we'll go on to the cookery show or whatever. And that's what's happened. It's been dumbed down, and the shows are made that quickly, and it's clear, you know, that no thought's gone into it, and it's not even reality, you know, it's unreality or non-reality.
Yeah. It's in keeping the catching up to the paranormal, as we've always sort of thought that
people often ask me, you know, you've done so many books, and you know, we see you on this show or that show talking about ancient aliens or whatever, but you know, why haven't you got your own series? And I've been honest, I've told people the reason I haven't got my own series is because I won't kiss ass and lie, and I won't recreate stuff for the camera, and I won't pretend we saw something if we didn't see it, and I won't be made to wear some stupid Indiana Jones type outfit, which ain't me, you know.
Exactly.
And so what I won't do anything that they want me to do to make what is basically a fabrication or an exaggeration of the facts. You know, I'm not going to say what was that if I didn't hear anything, you know. I would be quite happy to get involved in a series that was like really like so-called warts and all, you know, where it followed you on the investigation, and if you found stuff, great, and if you didn't, well, the angle then is they went looking, they tried, but they didn't find anything. But unfortunately, so many of these shows seem to think that, oh no, well we've got to at least have one person per episode saying what was that? Well, why, you know? Why have you got to fake it? Why can't I just tell it as it really happened? But when I start saying, you know, what they say, what are your stipulations? Well, I won't do this, I won't do that, I won't wear this. They're like, I can see that. I can see the face going blank. You know, this guy wants us to tell the truth. You know, and they don't want the truth. Yeah, that's the weird concept. They're like, what? You actually want us to present the true picture rather than the entertainment picture? I said, yes, I want you to present the true picture, not just the entertainment angle. I mean, I understand the audience has to be entertained. That's vital. But you can actually use facts to entertain them as well.
Yeah, I mean, I consider this program entertaining, and we don't make anything up. I mean, we're not afraid to be like, oh, we don't know the answer to this. So
yeah, that's right.
People
but for some reason,
are mature enough to come to that conclusion too.
TV companies don't want that, though. They just want, you know, it to be a mystery, or they've got to have the weird sounds in the woods or howlings or whatever. I actually know of one show where they the production company went out, and unbeknownst to the cast, they got like a big loudspeaker, and they'd recorded a bunch of wolf howlings, and they'd played them to see what the reaction was of the team. Well, that's stupid, because you're actually fabricating, again, evidence. Now, in this case, the team weren't lying, because they weren't aware of what the crew were doing. That's a true story. I know the show and everything about that. And
Did they like reveal at the end of the show that they had set up the crew to see what they did, or did they just like wrap it all up?
No, if they hadn't done that, there would have been no story, because they didn't find anything. I don't know if that was like a last minute thing to make something out of nothing. It may not have been. It may have been pre-planned. But I do know that had that not been done, you know, it would have just been a bunch of people walking around the woods and coming across nothing. You know, and for me, if you can't sort of go with the reality of it, if you're actually reduced to, you know, it's not necessarily just deceiving the research community or the cast or whatever. It's actually the people who sit down and watch it and think it's all real. You know, that's who I kind of feel sorry for. You know, I mean, it's kind of like there are UFO shows on now that you can just tell it's sort of recreated stage stuff, you know. And it comes across as forced, and it comes across as not, you know, what it should be.
What I was thinking there as you were telling that story, the reason why I asked, because, see, that would be interesting if they did a show where, you know, it doesn't have to be every episode, but, you know, a situation where they do fabricate these sounds to see what the people think and then talk to them afterwards and say, okay, it wasn't a Bigfoot, it was this. But what were you thinking? How were you feeling? Maybe, you know, who knows? Maybe we learned something somehow from that.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
You just never know. They might be like, oh, I smell, you know, the mind might play tricks on them. The next thing you know, they smell that preconceived sulfur Bigfoot smell that they expected. But we know that we set them up. So it's
That's actually not a bad idea. And the reason it's not a bad idea because you could have like a show that talks about people's perceptions and how the mind sort of fills in blanks and whatever. That's fine. But when it's just done for purely to create something because nothing really happened and they've got to give the relevant TV network something, so they fake it. You know, it's kind of like, well, you can actually go out and really do make a good show. And if you don't find anything, you can still make it entertaining. You know, it's like if you went to Loch Ness and you didn't find the Loch Ness Monster, well, don't fake stuff. You know, make it a really entertaining, sort of fun, cool show that makes the people, you know, the focus, where you've got somebody sort of standing on the shore at the end, sort of spent all his money, you know, $5,000 or whatever, coming to Scotland, and he's found nothing.
that would
be kind of like a good human interest angle, but they want the long neck sticking out the water, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we get Carl Pilkington to put together a show like that. He could give him a lot of money. Now, I raised this question to my friend Vaney, Jeremy Vaney. We were talking the other night and mentioned I was going to bring this up to you. This is sort of an idea that's been rattling around in my head for a little bit, and that's we're going way off the course here, but forgive me. The question is, in so much literature and conjecture about the paranormal, we oftentimes sort of ascribe this human element to it where it likes to play tricks, that it's sort of a trickster element. And I just wonder if we're making a mistake humanizing the paranormal by, you know, trying to fit it into it's like us, that it wants to fool people, when maybe it might be something more akin to like a natural phenomenon, not in a sinister way like it's Venus, but a natural phenomenon where, you know, a certain rise in electromagnetic energy allows your mind to perceive other things. It's not necessarily that it's trying to trick you. It's just that the window is only so big. But I guess we're really rambling here. But the point, I guess, of the question is, do you think maybe we need to step back and avoid humanizing the paranormal as we look at it?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like a lot of my view. When I was a kid, you know, it was all sort of black and white, you know, aliens, UFOs were aliens, and Bigfoot was this, and the Loch Ness Monster was that. And the more you look into it, it's kind of like Brad said, that there seems to be sort of some unifying things and themes between a lot of these phenomena. For example, you can sort of clearly look at some of the messages from the so-called Space Brothers in the 50s, and you know, people talk about the sort of long-haired Space Brothers in the desert, but some of the encounters, the so-called Space Brother contactee reports, occurred where the people would receive the messages in their minds. Some of them even used Ouija boards. George Hunt Williamson used Ouija boards to contact aliens. And so you can find parallels between the messages from the Space Brothers and messages coming through Ouija boards and through, you know, supernatural means. And I think there's something to be said of the idea that maybe all these phenomena are interconnected, and that in some fashion that our beliefs and perceptions sort of mold the way the phenomena appears. And maybe, you know, when you talk about energies, possibly whatever these energies, maybe even intelligent energies, they pick up on our subconscious beliefs. And then, you know, one person who believes in Buddha, it's going to appear as Buddha. Somebody else who's obsessed with the Space Brothers, it's going to be a human-looking alien with long blonde hair and a gleaming white robe, you know. But the big question is, why are these things appearing? What's the point of it? You know, is it to sort of teach us, trick us? But I think you make a good point when you talk about humanizing it versus dehumanizing it. We always think, you know, people sometimes ask me, do I think the aliens are good or bad? You know, well, that sort of suggests you've made your mind up that there are aliens and they're not something even weirder from some other realm of existence. And saying they're good or bad, well, people aren't good or bad. You know, we all have the ability to be good or bad. So I don't think it's as simple as saying, you know, people want it black and white because it's easy to understand. But I think the problem is when you're dealing with something that is so literally alien, not necessarily extraterrestrial, but literally alien, then how can you even begin to put like a human angle on it? You know, we try to, as I said, to try and make it easy to understand it. But really, if you think about trying to humanize a creature from another world, you know, trying to humanize, it's like trying to humanize a lobster or something, you know.
Yeah, right. It's like people who, and they very well may be doing this, but it's like people who presume, you know, that their pets are on a human level, you know, or it's like, oh, my cat loves to hide from me. When it's like the cat may have no idea that it's hiding from you, so who knows?
Yeah, and I think there's sort of like a fine line because, I mean, obviously, you know, animals are intelligent and they're playful and, you know, they love their owners and so on. So there is that connection there. But when we're talking about something that's really alien to us, definitively alien, and you're trying to understand the motivations and why they appear and why certain people get the experiences and others don't, and, you know, I think we're struggling as much as people were 500 years ago when they were trying to, you know, look at hauntings and goblins or whatever, or 2,000 years ago with demons, you know, and djinn. It's, I think a lot [S2] Right. [S1] Of this is all the same phenomena or phenomenon, but in different formats over the years. But I'll be the first to admit, I don't really have a good basis of sort of belief as to what it wants or what it needs from us. You know, maybe it's a bit of both. I just don't know. I mean, you could sort of speculate that it's bored, you know, and it plays games with us, or it's trying to teach us or deceive us or, you know, elevate us. Who knows? Maybe it's a combination of a
it
bunch of
it could be anything,
stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this connects back to the conversation just now with Brad, too. I put him over. I'll put you over in the same way. It's refreshing. It's why I like both of you guys, that you haven't put your stake in the ground on one thing and you know, just trumpeted that as your, as your stance on stuff, which is what more people need to do. We need more people who are saying, well, I don't know, but here's some ideas, I guess the best way to put it.
Yeah, and I mean that's something I've never really understood. It's kind of where Brad said how he likes to write about a bunch of different subjects. I've never kind of understood the idea that, well, if you write about UFOs, you can't write about Bigfoot, or if you write about ghosts, you can't write about conspiracies, because, well, you're the ghost guy, or you're the cattle mutilation person, or you're the person who deals with alien implants. And now you write one about crop circles. Well, what's the connection? Well, there is no connection, you know. And I think that's sort of one of the problems with the subject, the paranormal subject in general, that it kind of pigeonholes or tries to pigeonhole the people in the subject and, you know, the pressures on to follow this belief system or that belief system. You know, again, I've been at conferences where I've seen people who I know disagree with one of the particular speakers, and then they're dealing with them later and they don't want to talk about the fact that they disagree with them because they want to kind of get in with them, you know, and maybe do some work for them or whatever, you know, something to their advantage.
Yeah.
But to me, that's like kissing ass. I mean, you know, I haven't seen Stan Friedman for years, but we differ massively on Roswell. Last time we met in Canada, we hung out and had pizza for lunch, you know.
Yeah.
That's how it should be. You know, you shouldn't be frightened or afraid to admit that you differ on stuff. You know, if you can't sort of sit opposite someone and admit you differ from them in terms of what they believe, or you worry about admitting it, well, there's something wrong. You know, I mean, somebody said to me, Nick, you know, I appreciate what you said about the Men in Black, but I think your theory is full of shit. You know, I think, well, that's what it's about. We should debate it. You know, I'm not going to stand there with my arms folded all defensive and say, no, I'm right. It's like I'm honest enough to admit when it's things like the Men in Black, Roswell, alien abductions. We really don't know what the truth is. And to sort of say it's definitely this, and to not want to rock the boat with the community because you want to get on in the community, well, you know, that's pretty pathetic.
Well, the community, if we're going to talk about UFOs, I mean, there's definitely, I feel like there's a sort of a problem with the community right now where it's, I feel like it's just gone too far astray from the scientific aspect of things. Not necessarily that it would be particularly helpful juncture to figure this out scientifically, if it's even possible anymore. But I guess my bone of contention is that we're too, I'm not really even a part of the UFO field. I'm like you, I guess you could say. I'm a Fordian as well, who has an interest in UFOs and an interest in cryptids and all this stuff. And I feel like ufology has gone way too far down the path of activism and trying to get disclosure and everything. And we've talked about this in the past, and I feel like there really needs to be a turn back towards just some kind of scientific element of all of it, and trying to figure, just trying to figure it out beyond science, just trying to figure it out.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, you can look at the UFO subject in the 50s and 60s and 70s, you know, before any of us today were doing research, and then it was about grassroots research, getting out and actually doing in the field investigations, which you don't see as much of today. Today, it's very much a case of historically looking back at old reports and trying to figure them out, interviewing old timers, and pushing the government to release this or that, which I'd be the first to admit, I think there's space and a need for all of that, but that's become more dominating than trying to solve what the UFO mystery is. And for me, disclosure, I think in theory it's a great premise, but I don't think it's got a cat in hell's chance of working because, you know, there's in my mind, somebody is hiding something. And I'm not even sure it's the elected governments. I think more along the lines of like a shadow government that even people in the official world, very few are clear to know anything about. You know, I don't actually think the government, the bad guys in all this. I think it really is like some deep cover shadow group. But the point I'm making is that whoever holds the cards, the idea that they're going to release all these cards just because UFO researchers say, we want the truth. I mean, that's just so naive to imagine that because you shout loud enough, they're going to say, oh, well, yeah, we'll reveal everything that we've kept hidden for 60 however many years. I just don't think it's going to happen. And if you look back historically at the subject, you know, Bill Moore was involved in an operation where with the intelligence guys, and they were going to use him as like a conduit to sort of get the truth out. Linda Howe did as well. Then if you go back to the early 70s, there was Robert Emmenegger, who was involved in filmmaking, and he spoke with government people, and there was going to be supposedly a release of stuff then. In one of Donald Kehoe books in the 50s, he said he was told that, you know, in a few months' time, the government was going to release everything, and it's never happened. If you're not aware of it, you wouldn't necessarily know that this has gone on so many times before where the government's finally going to come clean. And it doesn't happen. So I admire the sort of the gumption and the enthusiasm that people have to lobby and take like a political stance to get this stuff released. But I have kind of like a jaded view that it's too naive to imagine that it's going to happen just because you ask for it. I don't think there's anything wrong with trying, but I don't think anybody should be shocked if asking lots of questions get you nowhere.
right, exactly. I admire the chutzpah. That was I was going to throw in chutzpah there when you were when you were talking about that. Yeah,
exactly. To go back to what you said about, you know, scientific stuff, I think that is missing now, is that you can go back and find, you know, somebody did a major field report on, you know, a landing case, and they were out there for a week or something. You really don't get as much of that anymore. It's just basically bickering and arguing on the internet about how many bodies were found at Roswell or whether this witness, you know, in a 60-year-old case is genuine or not. It's all important stuff, but it's kind of taken the lead over actually investigating the subject, you know.
I've advocated for more statistical research, but I don't want to beat that drum because I do it every show. So, but I'd like to see, again, I'll call for that on this episode as well, more statistical research. Anyone who knows anything about statistics, reach out to me. So maybe I can try and get something going here in that regard. Now, our mutual friend Greg Bishop, he posted something a few days ago, and I talked to him about it online as well. He sort of presents the idea that this phenomenon, this UFO phenomenon, is incomprehensible. It's unknowable to us, but the government allows us to sort of speculate on it and uses that ignorance to its own ends to sort of nudge us in different directions and stuff like that, which I think is a pretty interesting perspective and sort of it's compelling in a lot of ways, because there does seem to be an issue of is it even possible for us to understand all this? You know, we know dogs exist, but you can't explain to a dog how the TV works. I mean, maybe we're stuck in that realm where we'll never really be able to get it all together, you know, in our human form, let's say.
No, I agree with that. I think there's so many aspects to the UFO phenomenon and so many aspects that don't react and act in the way we would necessarily expect them to. And there are certain facets of the subject that are kind of weird. I mean, for example, you take Whitley Strieber's stuff, you know, I think when Communion came out, a lot of people thought this was just going to be like a major well-known writer talking about how he's abducted by aliens. But to me, at least, to Strieber's credit, and I think it is to his credit, his book was very different. You know, he said, well, I'm not even sure they are aliens. He said they seem to have connections with the afterlife. They seem to know something about death and the soul and all sorts of weird stuff. And so, you know, if there are people in government that know more than we do, and I'm sure they do, there's this sort of tendency to think that because it's the government, they know everything. I suspect that there are a lot of people in government or the intelligence communities or the military that have, you know, they've got massive amounts of more material than we do. Maybe they do have bodies and wreckage, I don't know. But what I would say is that I'd be very surprised if they got all the answers. And I wouldn't be surprised if part of the reason for all this silence is because maybe they found out some of this weirder stuff, like the Strieber type things, and they just don't know what to do with it. They just don't know how to tell people that it's not just nuts and bolts scientists, that there are these other aspects to it. And I actually think that's probably one of the main reasons why the information hasn't been released. If it was just nuts and bolts ships occasionally crashed and, okay, we've got 20 bodies stored away and now we're going to tell you, I actually think that probably or possibly would have been released. But it's like, how do you tell people that these things have a knowledge of the human soul or the afterlife, or they can manipulate reality and, you know, who knows what? And maybe that they really don't even understand what they are. Maybe they, just because you've got a bunch of bodies, it doesn't really tell you, are they biological robots made by us in the future and sent back? Are they interdimensional? Are they extraterrestrial? Are they something else? So I think, you know, having a lot of material doesn't really necessarily mean you've got a lot of answers.
And plus, this kind of connects to pyramids in the Pentagon, in a way. I said this to Greg when we were talking about it. There's also the possibility that the government may know some things, but the Vatican knows other stuff, and the Russians know some stuff, and the Chinese know some stuff, and the Knights Templar knew some stuff, and various, you know, I guess what I'm saying is all these different, there may be a ton of knowledge out there, but it's all being held in by smaller pockets or groups of people who aren't willing to share all this. It would be remarkable to know that we could have had this all figured out a long time ago if everyone just kind of sat down at the table together and showed their cards.
Well, yeah, but I think that's sort of, you know, human nature. Everybody wants to be the first with the most. That includes information as well. And I mean, you mentioned the pyramids of the Pentagon, that, you know, the book I wrote about official interest in ancient mysteries. Again, it's clear from the files that have been released, like the CIA files on Noah's Ark, that they have an interest in these subjects. But again, there's no hard evidence to suggest they're sitting on 100% of the answers. I think they have a lot of suspicions that maybe there were civilizations that came before ours, or that there was an extraterrestrial presence, or somebody developed advanced technology thousands of years ago and then it was lost. They suspect all this, but they don't have the hard answers. And, you know, I think that's one of the things people often forget, is that governments can have a lot of information, or anybody can have a lot of information, but it doesn't mean you've got a lot of answers and clues to what really lies at the heart of it. And I think that gives, when we think that is the case, it sort of creates a false image of what the reality is. You know, I'd be very surprised if there weren't people in the Pentagon who sit around and, you know, in their free time over lunch saying, what do you really think happened at Roswell? Because they don't know. You know, they're out of the loop.
Yeah.
And even somebody who is in the loop, they may think, you know, you may find there are conversations hypothetically going on. Well, could these be biological robots? You know, are they built by us in the future? Or are they crypto-terrestrials? Or are they designed to be able to jump dimensions? You know, just because you've got this 60-year-old body in formaldehyde in an old cylinder, you know, it doesn't really tell you anything other than you've got a moldy old body in a cylinder.
Exactly. Well, you touched on something that crossed my mind for a future conversation with a guest who wrote about the afterlife, and that is and this came up with Rosemary Ellen Galley a long time ago when I talked to her, that I think knowledge of the afterlife, if they can prove it, if they know it, let's say the government knows there is an afterlife, that's, I think you hit the nail on the head in a big way, that could really be the true sticking point of all this. They don't want us to know that, because that would really cause more problems than us knowing that UFOs are real, that aliens are real, because it would strip away sort of the consequences of life in a way.
Well, I think one of the most important things is, you know, when you look at all these, and there are a lot of abduction stories where people have said they felt their soul was transferred out of the body, and, you know, that the aliens predicted somebody's death, and then there were stories about people seeing the greys in conjunction with like a spirit form of a dead relative. You know, my view is that if this is all true, and that there are a lot of stories that take it down that path, then maybe somebody has discovered that the afterlife isn't this sort of simplistic heaven and hell, you know, where one place is full of cloud and harps and angels, and the other place is underground, it's like a red hot cave, and, you know, everywhere's on fire, and there's this guy with horns and a pitchfork. You know, that's the traditional imagery that has been made, you know, has been dumbed down in terms of Christianity. You know, it's that idea that there are these two places. Now, a lot of other cultures have an idea, you know, there is like a duality of places in the afterlife. Others believe there's one. You know, other religions believe in reincarnation. They clearly can't all be right. You know, I sometimes wonder if somebody's found the answer, and the reason they're not revealing the truth about the UFO subject is because it would get into these other realms, and
right.
It might blow all the traditional imagery of what the afterlife is out of the window, and then you would have major religions would collapse because, not because they'd lied, but because the stories have been so distorted over time and dumbed down to be, you know, another dimension or a realm becomes just a burning hot cave with this guy on the horn, you know. And so I think that may have something to do with it, that it could alter our perception on religion. And religion, you know, I'm very interested in the idea that something survives bodily death, because I've had a couple of weird experiences. But I don't have any love at all for organized religion, because organized religion is about controlling people through fear and guilt, and it's less about what happens when we die. And you know, religion is part of the status quo, when people in power don't want the status quo challenged. And maybe the UFO subject has the ability to challenge it. So the view is, let's just hide it. It's too difficult to deal with.
Right, exactly. You hit the nail with that. You know, it keeps them in line and people under, you know, fear. And like I said, if they found out that the afterlife wasn't this heaven and hell situation, that, you know, maybe they don't even know that what happens after you die, but this, if something does happen, who knows what people would do? They might start robbing banks. They might start, you know, killing their ex-wives. They might start, who knows, you know what I mean? We're already seeing that kind of crazy stuff now. Can you imagine if people realize that there were no, that there were no consequences, then if they thought there were no consequences, it would be a bad scene.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one of the important issues. I mean, for millions of people, you know, most of us don't rob banks because we know it's wrong to rob banks, you know, but there are certain people who possibly live in fear that if they do this or do that, they're going to go to hell. And then if they find, well, there is no hell, there's just some other realm that could be explained by science, maybe, they're like, what does it matter if I, you know, rob a bank and spend the next 80 years living it up? If there's going to be not a consequence. That's how some people would look at it, I think.
It's a strange situation. Now, what do you make, this is something that's kind of crossed my mind a lot too, what do you, because you're a good student of the history of all this, what do you make of the 70s and the rise of the sort of peripheral phenomena to UFOs? Because we saw sort of, it was happening in the past, but it really sort of burst into the minds of people looking at the unknown. You know, things like crop circles, cattle mutilations, abductions, they all seem to bloom in that 70s period. What do you make of that, and where do you think that comes from?
Well, I mean, you can look at it from a couple of angles. I mean, if we've got sort of literal extraterrestrials or something visiting us, then you could make an argument, if it's all just nuts and bolts and nothing else, that their project was upgraded and they took it to the next step of, you know, making tentative visits and flyovers in the 40s and 50s and then abducting a few people in the 60s like Betty and Barney Hill, and then taking it even further in the 70s, taking more and more people, then sampling the animal kingdom, leaving markings on the ground and see how people interpret it and talk about it. You could look at it like that, or you could look at it from the perspective that the phenomena itself is constantly changing to sort of suit the people of the era, or to confuse us by, you know, presenting itself as something that it isn't. Or, you know, maybe there are multiple phenomena existing now that were before there weren't. But, I mean, the only thing we can say for sure is that the UFO phenomenon has changed even since the days of Kenneth Arnold back in 47. You know, back then, it was a lot of reports of like flying saucers or sort of vaguely triangular, wedge-shaped objects flying around, sometimes in squadrons, very often alone. Then in the 50s, suddenly you had the Space Brothers. Then you had the French wave of these little dwarfs in 54, soil sampling aliens, landing cases, then kind of abduction starting in the 60s, when the Space Brothers were sort of on the way out, 70s, like you said, abductions, cattle mutes, it's and then black triangles and crop circles. It's like the phenomenon itself is changing. That's why I think that it's not the simplistic nuts and bolts thing. I think a lot of these events and phenomena are changing. I think it's kind of camouflaging its real identity in a way that is acceptable to the people of that era, and we fall for the camouflage. Now, what lies behind it and why it feels the need to change its appearance or change its way it interacts with us, I don't know. But, you know, I'm not entirely sure it's a positive thing. I think it could be, from our perspective, a very negative, sinister thing. I mean, people say to me, oh, the aliens, you know, they're here to save us and help us, and I have to look around and say, well, what the hell have they done to help and save us? You know, you look at, I mean, a lot of people's health is not in the greatest state today. You know, I mean, you look at heart disease, diabetes in kids is rampant, you know, overpopulation. They're talking now about water, you know, becoming a commodity in, you know, in the next few years. Rainforest, global warming, polar ice caps, you know, all these issues, I don't see anybody from anywhere else doing anything to fix this. What I see is a phenomenon that kind of skulks around a lot, and, you know, if the abduction stories are real, abducts people for whatever purpose. Now, I don't want to paint it all from a darkness perspective, because there are a lot of people who've had very positive experiences. So I think there's, you know, I won't say there's good and bad. That, again, that's too simplistic. But the phenomena, I think, interacts in a way that maybe you want it to interact with it or expect it. You know, a person who's of a weak character might get sort of negative entities attached to them and attacked by them. That's why I think sometimes people who get involved in paranormal stuff and Ouija boards, things start to go bad in their life. Not because they're necessarily using a Ouija board, but they're of a weak-willed character, and some of these kind of like negative paranormal things, which I do believe are real, get their grips into people who don't have the sort of strength of character to fight it off. And then they start to, you know, they get sick, they get ill, they get paranoid, things start to go wrong.
Yeah.
And it's like a negative backlash, as it's become known, or a psychic backlash. And I think that's with the phenomenon. It's constantly changing according to our needs, beliefs, or perceptions. But the important thing is, I think it's a real phenomena from somewhere else. It's definitively alien, but whether that means extraterrestrial, like I said, or interdimensional, I'm sort of open-minded on all that.
Right, like a non-human intelligence.
Yeah, something non-human, but, you know, I don't feel any need. I wouldn't be disappointed if it wasn't extraterrestrial. You know, I'd be just as fascinated
right.
if it moved to be like a coexisting dimension or whatever.
Now, what do you make, we're closing in towards the end of the program, so I'll try and make this brief, and we can always trickle over here and unfortunately lose the live audience, but I won't keep you too much longer. But I guess this speaks to kind of what we were talking a little bit about, the conspiracy thing, where it's like we're in this sort of 15-year nebulous period where it's hard to really know what's going on because you're living in the now. But we've talked about how the paranormal has evolved and changed over the years. I guess, how do you think it's presenting itself now? I mean, what are we seeing now that maybe we haven't quite picked up on yet? I mean, are you seeing, like, the black-eyed kids sort of emerge and shadow people have kind of come into the fore in the last, decade or so? But, I mean, do you see anything else that maybe we haven't picked up on yet or haven't considered that may be the new face of the paranormal that we don't know yet?
Well, I mean, one of the things I would say is, because I've written a few books on the Men in Black and some of these shadow people, like the ones called the Hat Man, you know, they kind of look vaguely like the Men in Black. I actually do get quite a few sort of shadow people. And, you know, then you have these sort of other categories like the Grinning Man and the Slender Man, you know, and they're all kind of vaguely MIB sort of prototypes, if you like. And I definitely get a lot of those types of reports, and that's clearly on the rise in the same way that the black-eyed children reports are. A lot of the other stuff, I have to say, though, has sort of gone by the wayside. I mean, even abduction reports, you don't seem to get anywhere near as many as those today. You know, it's like, when was the last abduction book published? You know, maybe a couple of books, but back in the 80s and 90s, they were all over the place, you know. And a lot of the classic cases are gone, and I actually really don't see anything personally other than, maybe that's just because people who've got something to say about something they've experienced would approach someone who's, they know, done work in that field. Perhaps that's why, you know, I get a lot of the Hat Man and Grinning Man type stuff, but I don't get ghost reports. But I think the phenomenon has definitely changed. What I would say, I think the major difference with the UFO phenomenon is that it doesn't seem to be interacting with us at the personal level that it seemed to do in the 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s, when the phenomenon, you know, people would have personal experiences, there would be abductions, contactee cases, and for me at least, as far as the reports I get, and even reading the magazines and online, there doesn't seem to be as many of those sort of personal face-to-face meaningful interactions. It's more detached, I think, today, and certainly in the last 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk to you more about that, but we've got a minute left, so let me thank the live listeners for tuning in. There'll be a little bit of a trickle over here with Nick, if he'll allow me just to talk to him for a little bit longer and explore some of this stuff.
Yeah, sure.
And thank you, Nick. I didn't mean to put you on the spot there. I want to thank all the folks who tuned in. I want to thank Brad Steiger for joining us in the first hour. It's been an amazing conversation. It's been an amazing evening. I didn't know what to expect, but I really did enjoy it quite a bit. I want to make sure to plug once again the zombie book, The Encyclopedia of the Living Dead. That's by Nick and Brad, and it comes out in September, but you can pre-order it right now, folks. So pick that up. Once again, thank you to all the live listeners for tuning in. check out the podcast for more from us, and have a good night, folks. Okay, now the live listeners have gone. The follow-up to that, what you were talking about there, Nick, is it's interesting in a way because you've written the book about the contactees. They talked about how they were in contact with Space Brothers and stuff like that. Then it kind of died out. But I don't know what you see on Facebook, but I see a lot of strange people that say they're hybrids. It seems like there's this sort of rise in people who sort of allege that they're either in contact with aliens or they're half alien or part alien or something like that. It's pretty remarkable in a way. I guess the way perceptions have changed, people aren't afraid to say they are, and people believe it, I guess. It's sort of a weird going on, you know. I don't know what to make of that.
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's good. I think the one good thing is that people are certainly far more open about speaking about these sort of things today than they were, you know, a long time ago. I mean, back in the 50s, it actually wasn't uncommon at all if somebody saw a UFO to talk about it. But, you know, the number of people who may have been abducted, had abduction experiences, say, in the 60s, you know, everybody thinks of Betty and Barney Hill or the Herbert Shermer case, they're the main ones. There could have been hundreds. There could have been as many as in the 70s, 80s, but maybe people were just like, well, there's no way I can talk about that, until a few more reports
right.
started to trickle through, and then so people started talking more. You know, it's kind of like when one person does something, then others follow, because nobody wants to be the first, you know.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's why people are becoming more open, at least about speaking about, you know, they think they're a hybrid or they think this, because you haven't got the laughter factor. I mean, that sort of comes back to the television thing. Although a lot of these shows are dumbed down, the important thing is that the networks put shows on because they know they're popular. I mean, a few years ago, 20 years ago, you would get, like, Unsolved Mysteries or whatever those shows were, you know, Strange Mystery
yeah.
or whatever. And that would be it. There wasn't really much of a market for them. Now there is. So that's a good thing, even though there are negative aspects to it. And I think that's the same with the witnesses that they're, or the experiences, they're coming forward and they're saying A, B, and C, because other people are as well, and they feel comfortable. And so that in itself, I think, is a good thing, obviously.
Yeah. It's certainly changed even in the last, like, 10 years since I've been looking at all this. Like I said before, no one really in the mainstream talked about Bigfoot at all. It was really, it would perk up your ears if you were watching TV and you heard them mention Bigfoot. Now it's like they talk about it all the time. So you wonder what the hell's going on with all this as people get more comfortable with it. You know,
well,
maybe there'll be a sea change in perception.
Yeah, people do get more comfortable with it, and then the media picks up on it because they can make money from it. Then the newspapers, magazines pick up, and it becomes more part of popular culture with T-shirts and, you know, stickers for the car or whatever. And but, you know, things come in waves, and, you know, next year. It's like the whole zombie thing. You know, I think probably 5 years from now the zombie craze will be gone. Kind of like we had the whole Twilight and vampires and werewolf things. You know, that was really big a few years ago. Now, granted, the zombie thing has gone way beyond all of that in terms of interest. But I would
yeah.
be surprised. You know, the zombie thing is kind of like Beatlemania. You know what I mean? Well, those Beatlemania today don't exist. And I think that's kind of like with Bigfoot. It's Bigfoot's time right now. And then it'll go back to the hardcore researchers, you know, and the lectures and books and so on, but it won't have that sort of pride of place on all the, you know, the whatever, this channel or that channel, you know.
Well, I was thinking about what we were talking about just now, about where's the new phenomena. I guess the air booms, that's kind of another thing that kind of came along in the last few years. But it's interesting, you see these old stories die out, like the spontaneous human combustion, Bermuda Triangle. No one even talks about those anymore. So there's kind of a void here for weird stories.
I know you wrote about
the chupacabras. And it almost filled that vacuum in a way and mutated. And
no, you're right. But I think certainly stuff like I mentioned, like the Hat Man, the Slender Man, and definitely the Black Eyed Children, I think that, I mean, like David Weatherly's books are really good, and David gets cases all the time, you know, and so this is clearly a big thing. I think the major issue is that the mainstream media hasn't really picked up on the Black Eyed Children thing as such, but I wouldn't be surprised if that doesn't become, you know, like the next big thing, in the same way that crop circles were once, and now it's, oh yeah, it's the summer in England and there's going to be, you know, five or six new formations, and that sort of lost its mystique. But you're right, I don't really see too much new, you know, like a new phenomenon coming along, really, other than the Black Eyed Children. I think that's sort of really the biggest noticeable thing. And maybe a lot of the stuff Linda Godfrey does, like the werewolf and these upright dogmen things, those reports seem to be on the rise, I think, as well. Or at least people are talking about them more. Maybe it's a bit of the two.
And if you look at it from that perspective, if you sort of take a broader picture of it all, if it is all the same bouillabaisse, it makes you wonder where this is going, in the sense that they've now ditched the craft. It seems like UFO reports are down, but we're dealing with presences on the planet. We don't see where they come from. That's kind of weird.
Now, that's actually a very good point, because, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, when people saw weird creatures looking like aliens, they would always, well, I wouldn't say always, but very often be associated with the craft, specifically like the Space Brothers. They would come out of like a gleaming saucer in the desert, Betty and Barney Hill. You know, it's even with abductions today. Really, the witnesses, if you think that, they hardly ever report a UFO. They report being taken from the car or taken from the bed, and they're in a room. But most of the reports, you know, ask them to describe the shape of the craft they were in. Well, they don't really know, because they're just in the room, on the table, and the next they're back in the bed or back in the car. So even there, you have the detachment from the craft that you had, where you had the connection in the past. But a lot of these cases today with Black Eyed Children, the Grinning Man, Hat Man, Linda Godfrey stuff, weird humanoids in general, they're there and then they're not there. And even the ones that look like the Men in Black, you know, these fedora-type characters that sort of the next generation of MIB, the more paranormal-type ones, well, even very often they're not even seen, you know, in connection with a craft or anything. So you're right, there's a lot of humanoid-type reports that we perceive as being linked to UFOs, but where today we actually don't see a UFO.
Well, you've written a lot about, this connects to all that, in the sense, you've written a lot about the MIBs. Are we still seeing that kind of stuff happen? And if so, I guess, you know, encounters with strange Men in Black is the best way to put it. Are these things still happening? And if so, is there any sort of through line to these, why they're happening now? Because previously it was like they were warning people away from looking at stuff, and now you wonder if they have a different motivation when they appear, if they are appearing. So it's like a double question there on you.
Yeah, actually, I'm working on a third book on the Men in Black right now, which is almost finished. Paul Kimball's company, Red Star Books, they're going to publish it. And I get dozens. You know, it's kind of like when you write, it's like you, I guess, you know, when you do your show, you get feedback from people. It's the same with when I write books. And if you write a book on a specific topic like the Men in Black, and people have had experiences and they want to track someone down who they can talk to, you know, that's why I get like, I would say I probably get 50 or 60 reports every year, at least.
Wow.
Maybe more. And many of those reports aren't historical. You know, some of them are, where somebody will say, you know, my grandfather always used to tell this story at the family, that kind of thing. But, I mean, the new book I'm working on, I mean, there are reports there from 2013 seeing, you know, this sort of pale-faced, skinny guy with a black suit and a fedora. And 1950s cars in 2012. I get reports like that all the time. Now, what I would say is that, you know, people think of the Men in Black, they think, like I said earlier, Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, the government angle. I would say a good 95, 96, 97% probably of, I mean, that's generalized, but it's way up there, of the reports I get, the Men in Black, and nothing to do with government stuff. They're where people have seen a UFO and they've had the visit and they're clearly something stranger, or where there hasn't even been a UFO angle, but the person's been dabbling in the occult. I've got reports where people have been using Ouija boards And they've got visitations from the Men in Black. I got reports where people were taking LSD and trying to open portals and doorways, and then the MIB actually came through this sort of portal. So, in other words, yeah, the MIB don't just turn up in relation to UFOs. They seem to be tied to a wide range of paranormal phenomena, and many of the reports I get, you know, they are far more sinister and occult-based and occult-driven than they are UFO-based. But the reports I get today, they look just like they did in the sort of the Keel books, you know, Mothman prophecies, like sort of little emaciated, skinny, anorexic, anemic guys in suits that don't fit them right and hats and cars that are sort of 40 years out of their time, you know, so it's really, really weird. Very strange.
And when they get conjured like that, or even when they, like you're saying, that they don't have anything to do with the government, what are they doing then? Do they say anything? Do they sort of convey any sort of reasoning why they cross paths with the people who see them?
Do the MIB say anything?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no, not really. I mean, most of it is sort of warning people to keep away from this or to keep away from that, or sort of threatening. There are other cases, which even more sinister, I've got quite a few of these, where people have been dabbling in the occult and the MIB have turned up and actually tried to kind of entice them to do it more, as if, you know, it was going to help the MIB to get their grips into the people, you know, to sort of help them on their way, sort of thing. But there's, I mean, the reports I get are sort of, they're almost like chilling, you know, the best way to, chillingly weird, in the sense that that they come across as like, you can only describe as like evil, like a, if you imagine an evil energy sort of turned into a human form. And a lot of them don't, this is going to sound really strange, but it's like they don't even feel like they're self-aware. You know, people have said the MIB kind of don't seem like self-aware entities, as if they're almost like constructed by something, like a, you know, like a template to go out that does its job and then it fades out into nothing again. So there's a lot of weird stuff connected to them that goes, you know, far back, far away from the whole government angle. And I think when that happens, you know, and I get so many reports of people who don't know each other, then that really makes me go down the path that they're not government agents. And it's not the simplistic approach of the aliens are just sending out agents to silence us. There's, you know, when you find, like I said, LSD and Ouija boards and a lot of people who've had, this gets into interesting areas, a lot of people I've interviewed and have contacted me who've had MIB experiences have been Wiccans. You know, they're practicing Wiccans, Wiccan priestesses and things like that. And they've been visited and threatened. You know, or maybe they've opened a door and something's come through and got its grips into them. Because a lot of people do think the MIB kind of drain them of energy. They're almost like a psychic vampire. Maybe that's part of it. You know, you open the door and you let these things in and you're basically dinner, you know, in a strange way. So.
See, that's weird because it's almost, it's a difficult, the issue in a lot of ways with the paranormal is an issue of language. We don't really have the words to express what we're dealing with. And the MIB sounds like that's definitely a tricky subject, because when you hear MIB, people immediately assume government agents and stuff like that. But it clearly sounds like we're dealing with something way beyond that at this point.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I don't know what to make of it.
No, I mean, one of the big problems is, and what makes it confusing, is I don't think it's just one thing. I think if you go back to the 50s and the 40s, when we know that government agencies did send people out to interview UFO witnesses. Now, of course, the clothes that the guys wore back then were black suits and fedoras, you know, nothing to do with the Men in Black necessarily, but that was the fashion. So I think some cases that have become sort of classed in legend as, oh, that was a Man in Black case, were actually just visits from real government people who kind of dressed, you know, in that sort of style. And I think some cases maybe where the government agencies have, if you like, camouflaged or mimicked the weirder MIB who they realise exist, but they mimic them to cover their own tracks. You know, there are actually a number of indications that the government knows these weirder MIB exist, and they may have used their motif to, hey, you know, if we imitate them, that's going to act as a good cover, even if we're not really sure what they are. So yeah. You've got those two categories of government angles. Then you've got sort of these clearly paranormal MIB that pop up, you know, as I said, in occult stuff and UFO stuff. Now, whether they're sort of tulpas, whether they're time travelers, they're occult, I don't know. But they're not just, there's no way they're government people. And I don't think it's as simple either as they're, you know, some sort of hybrid alien, because you wouldn't then have the crossover with things like Wiccan teachings and the occult and whatever. So I'm more inclined to think that however we define what the occult is, I think the MIB have their origins in that realm. And I think they turn up sometimes when people are dabbling in things that maybe they shouldn't dabble in. Or if not necessarily they shouldn't, but if they've not got a good hold on it where they remain in control, that's when problems start and the MIB come through. Like what happened with Albert Bender, that's a classic example of somebody who went looking for something and it got its grips into him and he was a weak person, and before long his health, mental and physical health was suffering and he had to back away from it forever, you know.
So you got Close Encounters of the Fatal Kind. That's coming, let me see where the... I don't
That'll
have the
be
release
June.
Date in front of me here.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
June.
Okay, there it is.
Then
yeah.
The zombie book in September, providing the zombie apocalypse doesn't happen first, of course.
exactly.
And I'm wrapping up at some point that book with Paul, the new Men in Black book. So, but
it's
that'll just come out whenever it comes out, I guess.
Yeah. It's this new one, the Close Encounters of the Fatal Kind. That sounds spooky. I'll have to talk to you later about that.
I'll make sure you get a copy. But yeah, it deals with sort of researchers who've died of sudden heart attacks or alleged suicides that may not have been suicides, and legitimate cases of murder. You can find a lot of stories along those lines. And I mean, I was sort of limited on the word count. With this particular book, I was sort of limited up to 65,000 words. But, I mean, I could have made that book probably 95,000. There were so many really, in some cases, obscure reports of UFO research in the 50s. Not well-known ones, but some just vanishing, just not coming home again. And others where the suicide was so suspicious that, you know, only a fool would think it really was a suicide.
The one that always sort of vexes me is the downfall of James E. McDonald. That one always kind of stood out to me. Even if he was driven to suicide by his own hand, he certainly seemed like he was under the thumb of a lot of pressure from people who wanted to make his life miserable. So very sad turn of events there.
Kind of Maurice Jessup, sort of a very similar one as well. You know, where everything seemed to spiral out of control, and you know, they were sort of walking on the edge of a cliff all the time, and then things got too much. But you kind of sort of see these hidden forces and hands and players behind the scenes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's in a modern way. We don't see this too often anymore nowadays, or at least suspicious deaths. We see them in some of these like political activist type people. Reporters end up dying in odd ways, but you can probably speak to this. It's an odd sort of feeling, because I've interviewed probably at least 100 people, probably 150 people, and we've lost like 4 or 5, 6 of our previous guests to death. So it's an odd sort of feeling when you're in this field for a long time. You make friends, and previous guests or people you talk to, they're gone, and it's like, whoa, this is kind of drives it all home that. You know, this
yeah,
is,
pretty
I think
much
we need
starts.
To all sort of, I mean, one of the things I point out in the book is that ufologists are people first, and people, without being depressive, we're all on a time limit, you know what I mean? And hopefully it's a long time limit, and some people, unfortunately, it isn't. But, you know, most UFO researchers who die because, in the same way that a bus driver dies or a car mechanic dies, you know, they just die.
Yeah.
But in saying that, there are, you know, there is a significant number of weird and suspicious deaths in ufology that aren't just, you know, this. He died because he was old, you know. There's something more to it.
Yeah, yeah, especially back in the day. Okay, so the new book comes out in June, and then you got also the how about this? Has there ever been a book you haven't written yet that you've always kind of wanted to tackle? I know you don't do ghosts.
Yeah.
That
hasn't
changed,
really,
right? You're not...
No, the only reason I don't is because it just, all that kind of stuff doesn't really interest me that much, sort of ghosts and haunted houses. I just don't get excited by it. Not that I don't necessarily believe there's anything to it. I do think there's something to it. But it just doesn't excite me or enthuse me enough to sort of get involved. But I wouldn't mind sort of doing... did you say a book that I haven't written? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or a topic that's always sort of been, you know, you're always kind of like, well, I'll get to that, you know. I'll get to that at some point, and then it hasn't quite you don't have to give it away here, but
No, I'm actually just trying to think of one, but
well, you're so prolific that probably never happens, because you're just like, okay, that'll be the next one I write. So
well, I guess there are kind of offshoots of things, you know, that I could sort of get more involved in. I mean I'm very interested in that sort of afterlife angle of the abduction reports. I think that's sort of that would probably make for a you know, kind of an interesting book. There's certainly enough material. And, you know, maybe I wouldn't mind doing, I mean, a specific case doesn't spring to mind, but I wouldn't mind doing a book like on a cryptozoology book that just focuses on one case. You know, for example, like Monster Files and a lot of the other ones I've done, it's sort of a lot of road trips where I've gone investigating different things and, or it covers everything from Bigfoot to lake monsters to whales, whatever. I wouldn't mind doing, you know, sort of kind of like Keel did with the Mothman Prophecies, an entire book on one weird animal or one mystery. Do you know what I mean? That kind of thing,
rather
than a chapter on this or a chapter on that, which is kind of like, you know, Pyramids in the Pentagon or the whatever. That's like a chapter on Noah's Ark, a chapter on the Dead Sea Scrolls. I wouldn't mind doing like a full-length book that's just on, you know, the creature of whatever lake or whatever. Do you know what I mean? That sort of thing.
Hmm. I got one more here for you that crossed my mind. And I know you probably tackled this in Monster Files, but it's always sort of intrigued me because I've heard these rumors about the government after Mount St. Helens erupted, the government went in and, like, picked up a bunch of Bigfoot bodies and got rid of them. I guess I think I posed this to Lauren Coleman once, you know, what does the government know about Bigfoot? Do you think the government knows what's going on? And he sort of explained to me that, you know, even if they have satellites, like, looking down, that the people who are looking for terrorists coming into America, they've already sort of been trained to disregard a Bigfoot crossing the border or something like that. But what do you think the government really knows about Bigfoot? And if it knows much about him or it, why do you think they don't want to tell us about it?
Well, again, it's like with the UFO subject. There are good indications for people who come forward that, I won't say the government necessarily knows, but agencies may know something or do know something. But I think they're baffled by it because they don't understand it. Again, because I think they know it's not like just a North American equivalent of a gorilla or an orangutan.
Hmm.
And they've got a lot of data. They may have imagery and, you know, thermal imagery, all sorts of stuff. Maybe they've even got bodies. But I think they realize that there's a bigger story, which they haven't fully grasped. And they don't really know how to tell the story because it could be possibly, you know, unsettling overtones if there is something running around the U.S. that it would be fantastic enough if it was just a large ape. But if it's something weirder, I think, again, it's, well, unless we know the answers, and we don't, let's just not comment on it. But there are a lot of stories of military people who've said, you know, not just the Mount St. Helens story, but have talked about government files on the subject, which seem to sort of tie in with all the weird stuff. I mean, Stan Gordon, who wrote the book Silent Invasion, which is a really good book about a Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot wave in the 70s, Stan actually got visited by government representatives who wanted him to keep him informed. Now, I don't think it's coincidence that they approached Stan, somebody who was looking into the UFO and the weird phenomena angle of Bigfoot. You know, they weren't knocking on every Bigfoot researcher's door in the country. It was the people who made these weirder connections. And I think that's an important sort of pointer, that that's where the government's coming from. They've got these weird reports, but it's like with UFOs. It's, what the hell are we going to do when we don't really understand it in the first place anyway?
That makes sense. That makes sense. All right. Well, I really do appreciate you giving us this extra time. I hadn't anticipated that, but the conversation just kept growing from where we began. Let me plug here the books, Close Encounters of the Fatal Kind, Suspicious Deaths, Mysterious Murders, and Bizarre Disappearances in UFO History. That'll be coming at you in late June, folks. You can also pre-order that, as well as the zombie book, The Encyclopedia of the Living Dead. Nick Redfern and Brad Steiger, our two guests here tonight, they've got a book coming out. They finally team up, and I'm sure they'll be doing the media round, so I'm kind of glad we serendipitously, I didn't even know about this book as I was putting together the show. I saw you just linked to it the other day on Facebook after we were setting this all up, so it's kind of cool that I managed to get you guys on together before the wave will happen in the fall. And I really got to thank you, just got to really thank you a lot, Nick, for this. You know, this was completely thrown together at the last minute, but I knew I wanted to come back from our little hiatus here with the biggest bang for the buck, and I knew Nick Redfern was definitely got to be a part of that. And so I really do thank you for jumping in at the last minute and being a part of this, man.
Oh, no problem at all, Tim. I know what it's like when, you know, the guest drops or you just haven't got a guest, you know, and you need someone. It's you haven't got a show without the host or the guest or the audience. You know, you need all three.
Well, to your credit, man, the impetus behind getting you on and getting Brad on was really that I wanted to bring on some superstars here because we were coming back from the break, and I wanted, like I said, to have the biggest bang for the buck. So we weren't in dire need of a guest. We were in dire need of a star, and I knew that you were the right man for the job. Let me just throw some plugs in here. What's your preferred website that we send folks to?
Nick Redfern Fortean, Fortean, nickredfernfortean.blogspot.com. Or people can reach me at Facebook or Twitter. Just type it. There are a few Nick Redferns at Facebook, but type it in and scroll down and you'll see me, one of them. So.
Exactly, folks. Yeah, so check that out. Or just Google Nick Redfern. Punch him in Amazon. You'll be able to get all the books as well. If you are just listening to us on Blog Talk and you have no idea how you found us or where you can find more, you can find more at binallofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com. Much like Nick, we are also on Facebook and Twitter. Just punch in Binall of America. You'll be able to find us. This program is free, my friends. You're not paying a dime for it, but it comes out of my pocket to pay the expenses. So if you could help us out, that would be huge. Please make a donation to PayPal. You can find the link at Binall of America. And if you don't trust PayPal, you can also mail us a donation to our P.O. Box. The address can be found at Binall of America. As I said, this is our big return from the hiatus. We'll definitely have a new show for you next week, putting the final touches on that. It will probably be a live show. I can't guarantee that just yet. If not, we've got a couple of really good taped episodes already in the can and a few more that are going to be taped in the next couple of weeks. So awesome stuff coming down the line. Stay tuned to Binall of America and BOA on Facebook for more on that. Nick, if you're still there. Thank you once again, Nick, for coming on the show. I really do appreciate it. Big thanks again to Brad Steiger for joining us in the first hour. And thanks to all the live listeners who tuned in. And, of course, thanks to all the folks listening now here on the podcast. It's been an awesome return. Looking forward to a ton more fantastic episodes coming from BOA Audio down the pike. Thank you once again for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, my friends, this is Tim Binall, thanking you for listening and signing off.